Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. Hour number two of your Ben Jarofsky Show for Wednesday, December 18th. It's just moments away. We got our guests ready. They're wearing the same color shirt. Pretty cool.
I saw that. I would have worn mine. I got one like that.
The Burgundy Boys are here.
The Burgundy Boys. Whoa. You've been drinking that Sun-Times Punch?
No, I've been smoking that pot from Shuba, though.
Holy cow.
Well, he's got the chronic. All right, hour number two of your Ben Jarofsky Show for Wednesday, December 18th. It's just moments away. I didn't get weed from Tom Shuba, guys. That was a joke.
But there should be a sample for the media.
Yeah, they do that for
review copies. Yeah.
Taste of Chicago used to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah, the pizza here.
All right, hour number two is moments away, but before we get into that, we need to thank the following unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. First up, it's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 150 sponsor this program, and the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers Local 126 in District 8. A giant shout out to those unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. And of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show was brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. I'm going to break the fourth wall here a little bit. Ben, we didn't talk during the break. I have an update.
Oh, okay. Hey, you got an update?
Yeah, actually, I do. Okay. All right, the Ben Jarofsky Show, hour number two. Let's go. It is Wednesday, December 18th. And live from the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In this hour of the program, we still got Monroe Anderson in studio, and it's the return of our resident Bernie bro, one of like 50. We got a lot of them. Jacobin magazine writer Micah Utrecht. And now your host, oh, he'll be a Bernie bro by the end of this program, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Yes, indeed. Micah Utrecht is not only a Bernie bro, he wrote a book about Bernie. We're going to get into that a little bit, talk a little bit about his book, and then take the deep dive on impeachment and Bernie and Pete Buttigieg, Dennis's favorite candidate for
president. How'd you know? I was keeping that to myself. You read my diary.
And all the other issues of the day. Maybe ask Micah for his thoughts on the reefer debate, the great reefer debate we've been having. But before we do that, what is the update, young man?
All right, we have an update. With the new year comes a boatload of new laws here in the state of Illinois. And the Chicago Tribune recently wrote about this new law. Now, we all know about the Illinois gambling expansion and the new video gaming and betting laws. But also, coming to Illinois in 2020, legal sports betting and gambling from the convenience of your smartphone.
It's legal, I guess, because I know some guys who will remain anonymous.
All right, there you go.
Who are right now, hey, Ben, you want to bet on the second half
of
the Clippers?
Don't throw your friends under the bus.
We got the over, the under.
Smartphones will allow people to shop around for the most advantageous betting lines, make wagers as they fancy strikes, even in the middle of a game, and enjoy the stimulation of gambling without having to leave their couches or put on pants.
Wait, time out. What are you reading? The stimulation of gambling.
It's not for me. It's from the Chicago Tribune.
Stimulation of gambling. Wow. It's like if they wrote, they can enjoy the stimulation of marijuana. I don't think they ever write that thing. You know what I'm saying?
And this is concerning some experts saying that this can lead to addiction. Gamblers will be able to download apps that allow them to bet anywhere within state limits. The Illinois Gaming Board is supposed to finalize license application rules by this week. Spokesman Gene O'Shea said the agency is, quote, working to ensure that sports wagering will go live in 2020. 2020. Whenever it happens, the experience of other states suggests that phone apps will swiftly become the dominant method of sports betting.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There you go. What do you know? In the new year, along with marijuana becoming legal in Illinois, apparently crack will be legal,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no, I got to tell you, folks, and I've said this, and that we more and more we are financing government by taxing our vices. I have very mixed feelings about this. There's a libertarian in me that just doesn't think it's a good idea to have prohibitions. So, you know, I'm pretty much let it go. I've got strong libertarian streaks in me. On the other hand, as a reformed gambler, I realize gambling is no joke.
Right.
And we treat it like it's like this ha 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 funny thing, but I mean it's a serious, I think it's far more destructive to people for it than marijuana, and yet for years and years marijuana was the one that was illegal and they were arresting people for doing, and gambling got sort of a pass. So I think we're kidding ourselves if you think that there's not going to be a human consequence for the promotion of gambling. It's not just legalizing it, but promoting it as we do. And I could tell you this, Mike Amonro, already people are betting on sports games over their phones. I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of money that gets lost like that on a whim.
And you know, well, it's a good thing that they're going to start paying these college kids to play sports, some of, and basketball and football, because that would be a really easy way. Once you introduce legalized gambling to it, for them to figure out when maybe they should miss a shot or miss a tackle or something.
Well, that's been known to happen, you know, trying to fix games and
right.
stuff like that. But by the way, that bill, we had Chris Welch on talking about that bill. And I think it got stalled. They're not in any rush to pay. They're not in any rush to do that.
It's a rich thing.
Yeah.
You have to understand.
And we want to give a quick shout out to our friends over at WTTW Chicago. They just released their 20 new Illinois laws in Illinois. And starting tomorrow, 20 new Illinois laws in Illinois, I said. And starting tomorrow on the Ben Jarofsky Show and all through the holidays, we will be unpacking and discussing these new 20 laws one by one. And we're going to hear what Biddy J has to say about them. It's the Ben Jarofsky Show's and WTTW's 20 Laws of 2020.
This is pre-show prep on the Ben Jarofsky Show. The first time I've heard this.
Yeah, I just came up with it like 5 minutes ago.
I'm all down for it, man.
All right, good.
See, Micah, this is the amount of preparation that Dennis and I throw into this show. I just heard about this for the first
time. Consummate professionals.
Before we take the deep dive into Bernie and impeachment and the Donald John Trump and to Mayor Pete and all the other political issues of the day, Micah, give folks an update on your book. Is it completed? Is it? Can you buy it for Christmas? What's the deal?
The book is being typeset as we speak. It's finished, and the publisher is getting it ready for the hard copies that are coming in early April. So you can't pre-order. You can pre-order it on Amazon, but you can't pre-order it from the publisher or anything. But it should be around in early April, and hopefully Ben will have me back to give you the update when it's in my hands and in Ben's hands.
Absolutely. And the name of the book?
Bigger Than Bernie, How We Go From the Democrat... memorized, probably. Bigger Than Bernie, How We Go From the Sanders Campaign to Democratic Socialism.
I'll edit that out.
Thanks.
He'll edit it out for the podcast. And most people listen to the podcast. But we have some very faithful viewers who are now trying to get it. So one more time, just give it the complete name so people can get it.
Bigger Than Bernie, How We Go From the Sanders Campaign to Democratic Socialism. I wrote it with my co-author, Megan Day, who's a staff writer at Jackman Magazine, where I am the managing editor.
Very good. All right. And before we take the Bernie dive, I've been promoting your view on impeachment. And so why don't you summarize your attitude about the impeachment of President Trump?
I think that impeachment is a distraction from the main tasks for the Democrats and for the left wing in general of American politics right now. I'm not saying, of course, that Donald Trump doesn't deserve to be impeached. He deserves a lot worse than impeachment, probably. But I think that impeachment is a distraction from the Democratic Party putting forward a positive agenda that can actually move people to decide to vote for them and get behind something bigger and bolder. I think that since 2016, if not longer, there's been this kind of, you know, when Trump won in 2016, for example, the idea that many Democrats put forward was this was not a legitimate victory. It was the result of collusion from the Russians or whatever, which, of course, that collusion happened, that the interference happened. But it was a way to avoid doing any kind of soul searching about how the Democrats screwed themselves in that election and how going with a campaign who was a centrist and seen as part of the corrupt establishment helped lead to the result of Trump. And similarly now, I think so much of the Democratic Party is putting all its chips in on impeachment as a kind of one weird trick to deal with this guy who is admittedly, of course, the most corrupt president ever, the most bumbling, buffoonish, you know, openly reactionary president we've had, and certainly in a very long time. No denying that from me. But it's a one weird trick style solution to winning the election in 2020 by trying to throw as many allegations of corruption against him as possible, rather than saying, here is what the Democratic Party stands for. We're for Medicare for all. We're for free college for all. We're for all these things that we know that are very popular that people like Bernie Sanders are running on right now. So, he could be impeached or whatever, but I just think that doing that is putting all the chips in on something that is not what is actually needed to win in 2020 and do politics in a different way, to defeat Trump and to defeat Trumpism, like beyond Trump himself, whatever other guy, you know, emerges in the future who will take up that kind of reactionary, racist, anti-immigrant, et cetera, kind of politics. We need to be building something positive rather than going all in on impeachment.
All right. So before I ask Monroe to weigh in with his reaction, I need to clarify something. So are you saying that if you were Congressman Micah, you would vote against impeachment? Or would you be urging the Democrats not to impeach? Are you saying that you would be against this whole process?
I would probably vote for impeachment, but I certainly wouldn't be doing daily press conferences talking about how we're, you know, giving the blow by blows on impeachment and being a sort of impeachment cheerleader. I would be focusing on the positive agenda that I would want to put forward that I think is what would actually win over voters for 2020. Things like Medicare for all and free college and all the rest of that progressive agenda, rather than thinking that we can impeach our way into a victory in 2020.
Monroe, your response.
Okay, I'm going to go way back to the Vietnam War. Ho Chi Minh approached the war by saying that he could fight and sit at the table to have peace talks at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very effective because American soldiers were dying and being put on TV, and he was at the sitting at the peace table. They argued over the shape of the table, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do either or. In fact, it's more effective if you're doing both. So what I believe is that we definitely need the impeachment. For one reason is that Trump is going to cheat. He's been cheating, and he's going to continue cheating. And so if you don't impeach him, then he'll just consider it a means he's got away. He got away with something, and that it works, and then he'll do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in having him impeached, he has to run on that, and there are other things. They're also working on other investigations. So that is not a good thing for him to campaign on, to win on. On the other hand, I agree that the Democrats need to be talking about all the good things they're trying to do, and the progressive positions they need to take. So that's good. Now, I know Micah's a good man, and he's an honorable man, but I have to wonder if he doesn't like the impeachment and the hearings that'll be going on because Bernie is a senator. And so instead of being out in the field, he'll be sitting there quiet listening to the impeachment hearings.
Well, I'm pretty sure Bernie is pro-impeachment. He said as much. I think he tweeted today, you know, Trump is the most corrupt president we've ever had. No, I don't. I actually had not even thought about that. And in fact, it's maybe irresponsible of me as a managing editor of a magazine, but I don't even know what's going on with the impeachment stuff, because every time I try to get a handle on what's happening with it, I get so bored that I exit the article midway. I give up on the podcast midway. I'm like, the stuff that is being talked about in the impeachment hearings to me is just so, it's like a snooze fest. It's not compelling to me. It's not a cut and dry. I mean, in broad strokes, it's cut and dry. Trump is corrupt. But when I go into the details of what's happening, I'm just like, I can't continue trying to figure out what's going on. And I think that probably a lot of the American people have that same sense in responding to it. So, no, I mean, Bernie seems to be, I mean, he takes the same stance towards it that people like, I think, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan take, which is very pro-impeachment, but also pro-doing other stuff, as you mentioned, putting forward that positive agenda.
Well, I know the particular point he was making is that if there is an impeachment trial in the Senate, Bernie as a senator will be obligated, as Elizabeth Warren, will be obligated to spend his time at that hearing, and Mayor Pete will be free, the Mayor Pete's of the world, and Joe Biden will be free to campaign. So that's the point that Monroe was making.
That would be great, by the way. I would love to see Joe Biden more on the campaign trail. I feel like he's hiding from us right now. We don't get to hear from him enough. Every time he opens his mouth, he says something that makes him look like an idiot.
I actually, we'll get into my bizarre attitude toward Joe Biden's, the things that come out of his mouth. I think they help his campaign with the American public. But I'll explain that later. But here's my response. I've been hearing this. I've been having a version of this debate with lefties, my beloved lefties, since 2016. And it is this. Many lefties view the whole discussion about Russian interference in the election of 2016 as a distraction. And as you pointed out, Micah, that there was a problem that the Democrats had. They had a very flawed candidate, and they had a very centrist agenda that they try to shift left to win over some Bernie supporters after the convention. And on top of that, they made a huge strategic blunder in not campaigning heavily in the three important states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So that's sort of the reaction of Democrats of the leftist persuasion, and they just think it's a distraction to talk about the Russian influence. And I cannot help but point out, and I will continually point out, that the Russian interference in the Democratic election of 2016 is part of the reason why, even now, we have this split, this divide. Because what the Russians did very successfully is they hacked into those Democratic computers, released those emails that the Democrats were sending about Bernie, showing that the process was rigged against Bernie. And so at the very time Democrats were trying to come together for the good of the party to defeat Donald John Trump, they were at each other's throats. Protesting Debbie Wasserman Schultz, booing candidates, booing speakers of the Democratic Convention. And then, wait, there was one more dump. Wait, when people have forgotten all that in October, oh, you forgot that? Let's go get some Podesta emails and dump them. So,
and more, okay, and another factor, which I think is even greater than that.
Yeah.
Is the Russians turned the black voter off. And Hillary did nothing, nor Bernie, to actually reach them. So blacks in Milwaukee didn't show up. Blacks in Detroit didn't show up.
I can news for blacks in Chicago.
Blacks in Philadelphia, yeah. So you didn't, so the most reliable traditional vote that the Democrats had was not in.
Well, I'm gonna take Micah's position on this. I believe that was as much a result of Democratic policies. And I, this is something, Monroe, I've been thinking about that. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one, both of you. Who was it that said this to me? I can't remember who it was. I'm stealing someone's idea, and I apologize. I just can't remember who said this to me. But in some ways, like Hillary Clinton, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, they've all paid the price for Barack Obama's presidency. And there was so much hope invested in Barack Obama back in 2008 when he was elected. And there was so much relatively delivered for the most loyal part of the Democratic Party that many black voters' response was, what's the point? They sell us out as soon as they get elected. They don't push hard for stuff that help our communities. It's like the debate in the city council over reefer, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's...
who was it?
A stretch.
It's a stretch?
Yeah, it may have been something that Sergio said.
It could have been Sergio.
It sounded like Sergio.
It was Sergio.
Exactly, right.
Sergio Mims said
right,
that.
Exactly, right.
Okay, it was Sergio.
Right.
But so I think that's totally legitimate, though. I think that...
It was Sergio.
You're correct that that certainly the dominant strain, the people who have been part of the Democratic establishment over the last several decades have not delivered on certainly substantive change for working class people, including the multiracial working class in the United States. I mean, the Democratic Party has embraced neoliberalism, has embraced austerity. Under Clinton, was embracing mass incarceration policies. There's no delivery, and I think that is why I remember the articles about black voters in Milwaukee and the New York Times and other places about folks just not being excited about voting for the candidate. I mean, I think they're not. I wish they had voted for Hillary Clinton so that we wouldn't have President Trump right now. But they're not wrong to be disillusioned with a party that has not substantively delivered, including Barack Obama, who did not deliver substantive change. You know, no one would deny the importance of electing the first black president, of course. But in terms of actually alleviating racial inequality, segregation, economic inequality, all of it, no delivery on many of the main questions of his presidency.
And I think that, Sergio always comes up with cockeyed ideas. Let me point something out.
Yeah.
The reason Biden is still at the top of the heap is because of the black vote.
That is correct.
And the reason Biden has the black vote is because he was Obama's vice president.
That is also correct.
So I think that theory is cuckoo. It has nothing to do with what Obama delivered or did not deliver. Black people love Obama and Michelle right now.
A lot of them do. You're absolutely correct. Yeah. But
you do have your Sergios who are just contrarian, trying to figure out the next weird thing to think up.
It was Sergio, and he'll be on the show next week, and he'll be defending himself. But Micah, please address what I was saying, and that is the fact that it was a very effective tactic and strategy for the Russian hackers to reveal those emails and promote divisions that have not healed since. Right. I think it's like, I think Democrats are kidding themselves and fooling themselves to think that they can win an election purely on ideas when there's all kinds of wheeling and dealing and cheating that goes on in an election. We all know it from Chicago. No lefty in the city of Chicago would react to a campaign against the machine or the incumbent by saying, what the heck, they got the advantage. I'm just going to go out and, you know, talk about my great ideas for reforming property taxes. They're going to be talking about the machine, and they're going to be talking about the signs that got torn down, and they're going to talk about whatever little cheating stuff that Democrats in Chicago do to defeat. Isn't it the same principle at play in a national election when you're up against Republicans who are every bit as dishonest and deceitful as Chicago Democrats?
Well, so the question is what exactly? Like, shouldn't we talk about what the Russians did? Shouldn't we talk about the skullduggery that was happening in 2016?
Absolutely. Investigate it and punish Republicans from doing it, from having done it, and try to keep them from doing it again.
I mean, sure, but you know, I don't think that. I mean, what was revealed in the revelations in 2016? Nothing that people didn't already think, you know, on broad strokes about the Democratic Party. There wasn't some completely new narrative that was foisted upon them by these revelations. People already had the sense that Hillary Clinton was this corrupt establishment candidate. So I don't think it revealed anything new for them. And I think that, you know, even the I would counsel, you know, if any of them came to ask me for advice, any of those kind of lefty Chicago reformers, to not talk about stealing signs or whatever just nonsense, but to actually put forward a different vision of what a Chicago would look like. That was what six of them did in the last city council election, and won as Democratic Socialists, as part of a broader range of progressive aldermen who won in the last municipal election, and it paid off for them. So that's the tack that I would suggest taking, not this sort of stuff that average people can't even parse. They're just like, oh yeah, I guess Russians did something bad, but a much stronger narrative in their head is like corrupt establishment candidate for president. I want something new, and that's why they went for a Donald Trump. And I don't want to like replay too many of these debates from 2016 and in 2020, because I think that that will not, it's just not political. I mean, we can have a fun time sort of, you know, over beers or whatever, rehashing some of that stuff, but I don't think that's where most of the American people are at this point. They're forward looking. They want something positive. And like, if we're going to convince them to beat Trump, it's not going to be because, well, he benefited from this thing that happened in 2016 with these Russians. Like, people are tired of that. They want to move forward politically.
And we had a recent development among Republicans. You have these Republicans whose mission it is to defeat Trump. Prominent Republicans, Wilson, who wrote the book "Everything Trump Touches Dies," and you have Conway, Kellyanne's husband.
That's bizarre. Yeah,
and it's right. It's a couple of other former Republicans who are forming this coalition to defeat Trump. And the way they're going to do it is they're going to go into these areas where Trump is popular, and they're going to talk about what he hasn't delivered. You know, they're going to go to the Kentucky, mm-hmm. And talk to the miners and say, he promised you this, or go into Michigan and said he was going to give you these manufacturing jobs. They're going to attack him from that angle. Mm-hmm. I think that Democrats have to do the same thing. You know, it's one thing to talk about, yeah, we're going to give you all this stuff, but the other thing is you got to throw a little dirt in the game.
All right.
That's why he was after Ukraine.
I'm going to put aside the notion of throwing dirt in the game, and Mike, I got to ask you this question. I don't think I've asked you this question. Miles deals with this question every Thursday when he comes here, and Carlos is going to get this question as well, Ramirez Rose, when he comes in later today, and that is this. I've been thinking about this a lot. Usually, the Democrats nominate a centrist and then tell the lefties in their party, shut up and go along, and then they get mad at the left. Lefties when they don't always go along. All right. If Bernie is the nominee, it's going to be reverse. The Democratic Party will have nominated a lefty. And the centrists of the party will be told, shut up and go along. I've been writing about this and thinking about this a lot, based on things that like Hillary Clinton said on the Howard Stern show, and that your good friend Rahm Emanuel says, you know, on ABC TV.
They roll him out every time they can on national media. It's crazy.
Just how does your good friend, the look in your face when I said that.
Yeah, no, he's a contributor to ABC now.
Make a chill
yeah,
from that.
Yeah, sorry, Rahm. Right. But I'm starting to think that the centrists won't hold their nose.
Of course not. No.
So they're going to not practice what they preach. What do you think about that?
I have never seen, you know, any kind of shocking case of hypocrisy in American politics ever from Republicans. Never. I don't know what you're talking about, Ben. No, of course they're going to do that. You think Rahm Emanuel is going to be out on the stump for Bernie Sanders? That's not going
to
happen.
I'm not even asking him to go on the stump. I'm just saying, is he going to vote for him? Shut your mouth and vote for him. I didn't say go on the stump.
No, it's true. I think you're totally right. I don't think we're going to see that. I think you're going to see, you'll probably even see some kind of, some, maybe not Rahm, but some, prominent voice of the center of the party even talk about forming a third party and running as the equivalent of the Liberal Democrats in the UK, like the single percentage centrist party that runs in addition to Labour and to the Tories. So, yeah, I think that I don't trust these people. I mean, there is a real visceral hatred of Bernie Sanders and of the kind of politics that he and that I represent, that kind of robust left-wing politics. The party has done everything that it can over the last 3-4 decades to destroy it. So, of course, they're not going to be on board for that.
When I was at Indiana University back in the late 60s, when the Black Power movement was just jumping off, the black nationalists would say of the white liberals, the left, that they're here now, but they can be white whenever they want to, and they will. Mm-hmm. So there's this distrust among many black people, not all, but many, about white liberals, because they think that, sure, they have these progressive ideas, but it's mainly for white people. If you look at the women's liberation movement, it's the same. So what the Democrats, I maintain, that what the Democrats have to do if they want to win is come up with a direct conversation to their most loyal bloc, which is black women in particular and black people in general. And so if you don't have that, all this other pie in the sky stuff, it's not going to get you there. It just won't.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll follow up on what Monroe said and go through some of the particulars in the race. I know that Micah and Monroe have some interesting things to say about Mayor Pete. So we'll be right back after this.
The Ben Jarofsky Show is supported by Northwestern University's part-time master's program in literature and liberal studies. Students learn from dynamic and diverse faculty as they build advanced skills for critical analysis, writing, and research. Evening classes are held on Northwestern's Evanston and Chicago campuses. The spring quarter application deadline is January 15th. Learn more at sps.northwestern.edu/masters.
It's Chicagoland's adult entertainment playground. It's the world-famous Admiral Theater, 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. The Admiral is homegrown from Chicago, and it's the most conveniently located club in all of the city. 15 minutes from the O'Hare Airport in downtown Chicago Loop. Voted Chicago's best strip club, the Admiral has showgirls galore and a variety of adult entertainment shows. The world-famous Admiral Theater, open every day from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m., 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. For events, showtime, and other information, visit AdmiralX.com. Must be 18 years of age or older to enter.
Hey, everybody, what you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffmanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent, and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, PIANIST.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.
The biggest Jeff Manuel fan on the planet. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yes, it's M-Day in the Ben Jarofsky Show. Micah and Monroe in the studio. We're debating all the issues of the day, impeachment, et cetera, and so forth.
And I just want to remind everybody before we go any further that Carlos Ramirez Rosa, 35th Ward Alderman, he's going to be coming in for a bonus interview. And what we're doing, if you're listening on the live stream chat, we're going to live stream it. It's at 4 p.m., so we're going to end the show at about 3:30. And then after that, come back at 4 o'clock and then check out the interview with Carlos Rosa. If you miss it, don't worry. You'll be able to download it by Monday at both Chicago Reader and Chicago Sun-Times websites and wherever else you download your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of good bonuses over the weekend. This weekend, some good bonus. I can't remember who they are at the moment. Once again, memory fate. That short-term memory always is the killer. All right, Micah Monroe was making an excellent point before we went to break that if the Democrats want to win, they must do a great job of giving black voters a reason
to come out and vote.
Other than just, well, we're not Trump. Although that's going to help, don't doubt about it.
There is some Trump hate.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah, right.
What's your thoughts on that?
No, I agree. That's the case that I've been making, and I think that is what the kind of politics that he's putting forward represent. They represent, and not just for black voters, but for Latino voters, for the entire working class of the United States. That there's actual there's meat. You know, what's the dope on the table? There's stuff on the table. There's actual policies that are being proposed that would materially change people's lives and voters of color in particular, whether it's Medicare for All or student debt forgiveness or a significant change in immigration policy in the U.S. All of the stuff that Bernie is putting out there. And so I agree. That's the kind of it can't be a pure politics of symbolism and of I am not Trump and of you know, but what Biden argues for, which is a kind of return to normalcy of the past. You know, you don't like this guy Trump, just elect me and I'll make it all go away. I don't think that's going to be enough. I'm honestly worried about what a Biden versus Trump matchup would look like. I'm not confident. Biden might be able to beat him, but I'm not as confident in that as someone like Bernie running and winning. And The difference between the two of them couldn't be clearer in the election, where Bernie is saying, I'm going to do these things that would tangibly affect your life, and Trump just sort of doing name calling. So as well as, you know, racist, xenophobic appeals and all of that. So, yeah, I think that tangible agenda is what's needed to mobilize black voters, mobilize Latinos, mobilize the working class vote that would carry a Democrat like Bernie, or some Democratic candidate like Bernie, to the presidency.
All right, now I'm going to deal with Joe Biden for a moment before we get to Bernie versus Pete. This interesting little theme I got in my mind. But the reason I say I do not believe Joe Biden's bizarre performances in debates, the weird things that come out of his mouth, will hurt him is, and Mike, I know you're going to accuse me of being cynical and jaded, which is what most people accuse me of. When I say things like I'm about to say, is that I've never seen evidence in my life as a political journalist in the city of Chicago that an inability to speak a straight sentence, the inability to make a coherent point has hurt a politician.
Look who's president.
Okay.
Not only look who's president, but Elizabeth Warren would be at the top of the pack. If eloquence was the main thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Mayor Richard M. Daley could not complete a sentence he entered. His father, too. They enter a sentence in one place and end up somewhere else. And the people of the city of Chicago said, that's our mayor. Yeah. And they voted for him. Right. And they'd still be voting for him.
Remember when Daddy Daley's press secretary said, don't print what he said, print what he meant.
Yeah. So over Thanksgiving, I had a great time with some of my millennial friends. We were listening to Joe Biden from one of the debates. this is what we do for fun in the Ben Jarofsky house, Micah. We were listening to Joe Biden. We were sitting by a fire. It was a great night. And Ian, if you're out there listening, God bless you. And we were listening to Joe Biden from a debate. It was a debate where he started talking. He was trying to say it was important to talk to your kids.
Oh, my God.
And
that's painful.
It's painful. But I'm like, you know, Ian, Americans can understand what he's kind of saying. And I think there's a lot of people in this country go, you know, I'm not the greatest speaker in the world,
but
he speaks from his heart.
That's like George Bush. Like, he was a guy who you'd want to have a beer with, right? That's what people say.
Baby Bush.
W. Bush.
Yeah. And because Daddy Bush could complete a sentence.
Right.
Baby Bush couldn't complete a sentence. So, and then the other Baby Bush lost because he could complete a sentence. Jeb Bush. So the Bush family right there proves my point. The Bush, Baby Bush, who couldn't complete a sentence, didn't win. And the Baby Bush, who couldn't complete a sentence, won.
And
so,
Senior, who could complete a sentence, couldn't win re-election.
Yeah, couldn't win re-election. So it just proves my point.
Read my lips.
Yeah. No new taxes. So I'm saying that, confusion, perhaps senility, is not a deterrence in politics.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I would not advocate for going all in on a campaign against Biden to within the Democratic primary by saying that he can't complete a sentence, although it is a little disturbing how he does his mind does seem to be failing him. I think that the more substantive thing that should be brought up is his policy record, which is one that is no different from the rest of the centrist neoliberal Democrats when it comes to war on Iraq. He was the main Democratic player who was the kind of Bush go-to man for selling the Iraq war to the Democratic Party. Go down the bankruptcy bill. I mean, all of it. He mass incarceration. He's not a progressive candidate. I think if we're talking about the substance of his legacy, Biden does not come out looking too hot.
Yeah, you know, it just occurred to me, we can't have this conversation realistically and not mention Bloomberg.
Mm.
Because he's got more money than God.
Yes.
And he's rising in the polls already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never believed that Pete Buttigieg, I could be wrong. I was just about to say that.
Some people say Judge.
Buttigieg, yeah.
Buttigieg.
Well, some people who know. I call him Mayor Pete. Dennis is not here and he stepped out, but he always corrects me on Buttigieg's name. Oh, here he comes. How do you pronounce Mayor Pete's last name, D?
Buttigieg.
Okay. I've never believed that he was going to be the candidate. I never thought. So Buttigieg, his voters are Bloomberg voters. And Bloomberg does have a ton of money, and Bloomberg will saturate the airwaves.
Is saturated.
I know. I saw a Bloomberg ad.
Well, and we're in a state where the last two gubernatorial elections have basically been bought by billionaires, right? I mean,
yes, you very know, good point. Yeah.
Both Republican and Democrat, yes. Billionaires who bought their way to the governor's mansion.
Right.
So I think Bloomberg is a. I don't dismiss any man with that kind of amount of money and the willingness to spend the money. That said, I don't think anything in his background suggests that he could defeat Trump. I just don't see it coming at all.
Oh, yeah. No, he could defeat Trump.
You think he could defeat Trump?
He could defeat Trump.
Why do you say that?
I'm of the school that
anybody can defeat
Trump. Yeah, right.
Trump.
Put me in the race and I will defeat Trump.
Yeah. Are you announcing your candidacy right here, Monroe?
That's a stretch. Why do you...
I'm smarter than he is. I'm younger than he is.
You are younger than Donald Trump. That's one of the few...
By this much.
But I Buttigieg is an interesting character here because I point this out all the time. He's running as his appeal is that he's young, he's fresh, he's new, and I don't know any millennials that are for him. And the only people I know are former baby boomers.
Well, last I heard, he was getting 2% of millennial support in the election.
But boomers love him. Yeah. Oh, he's such a nice young man.
Right. He's the grandson they've always wanted.
Yeah, it's an Eddie Haskell theory, which is that he's really nice to older people. Right. Oh, let me take your bag. Oh, you're such a nice lady, Mrs. Cleaver. So you're not attracted to Mayor Pete, huh, Micah?
No, I think that Buttigieg, well, first of all, he's clearly, I don't like to make political decisions on this kind of basis.
But
the guy does seem like he was grown in a lab to run for president. Every decision he's made over his entire lifetime has been for the purpose of running for president. And I personally do not trust people like that. The sort of teacher's pet type, the kind who's running for every student body office, who's trying to win every award, who's going to Harvard. I just don't trust it. And I think there's a lot of millennials. I mean, you know, that's just sort of like a personal thing. But it also is a substantive thing because, like, we're a generation who have been screwed every step of the way when it comes to being overloaded with student debt, dealing with housing prices that are higher than ever, stagnant wages, all of it. And Mayor Pete is the sort of like the cream of the crop who sort of, while the rest of us were suffering with all of those problems, has gone off and been a McKinsey consultant and gone to fancy schools and is that sort of teacher's pet, valedictorian, top of the class kind of guy. And he's saying to the rest of us, you say that you want these changes in policy, you want student loan forgiveness and all the rest of it. No, I'm not giving that to you. You should have worked hard like me. You should have gone to Harvard. You should have gotten a fancy consultant job.
And a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah, Rhodes Scholar. You should have done all these things. And then you like me, could have been on top, and you wouldn't be saddled by all this student debt and all the rest of the problems you have. And we're just like, F you. Like, there's millions of us in this generation who are suffering, and we're not. And Pete is telling us that it's like implicitly telling us it's your fault, and I'm not going to do anything to change any of that.
Yeah, there was a report that came out last week. Cory Booker is also a Rhodes Scholar. And they looked at how many times it had been mentioned that Mayor Pete was a Rhodes Scholar, and it was something like 500. And for Cory Booker, it was something like 125.
Why?
Or something like.
What do you think? What do you think is at play there?
You've heard the theory that the white man's ice is colder than the black man's ice. I think it applies for that. Again, it's like Cory Booker. The Rhodes Scholar is not nearly
as good
as Mayor Pete Rhodes Scholar.
Well, it's also true, though, that Mayor Pete's whole thing is like, I'm smart. Look at me. I'm smart. I speak seven languages. Oh. Cory Booker is thankfully, in my opinion, not running that same kind of campaign where he's
except in I think it was the first debate or the second debate, Mayor Pete launched off into Spanish. In one of his ads.
Yeah, I saw that. It was first debate.
And Cory got pissed off because he's already to shoot off in Spanish. So I was like,
Cory Booker, he put all his money in that charter school gamble, and he's feeling the same pain on that issue that Mayor Rahm felt. That was a losing issue for Democrats to advance the argument that somehow or other was in the best interest of poor kids to have teachers who are underpaid be their teachers. And what a dumb argument that was. And it's just completely backfired on Democrats.
And it's a kind of mirror image of Kamala Harris going all in on being a prosecutor who's tough on crime because she thinks that that's what is going to propel her political career forward. And then the political winds change and say that actually this has been really destructive to black people and to all kinds of poor people around the country. And now she's, you know, she has to, quits her presidency campaign because people are not buying.
All right, so fair enough. Then at least ideological consistency finally seems to be a premium in the Democratic primary. So let me ask you this, Micah: why aren't you a Warren bro? Why aren't you for Elizabeth Warren? She's been pretty ideologically consistent over the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, right when she stopped being a Republican. Yeah, she's been consistent. Yeah. I mean, to me, you know, I'm not anti Warren by any stretch of the imagination. I think I said on the show once that she was the first political donation I ever gave. I gave her $20 to one of her Senate campaigns after I saw a really inspiring ad when I was like 22, 21 years old.
Did you say that when you were on the show with Brandon Johnson?
I can't remember. I think I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, the bigger issue to me is that Bernie Sanders is pushing for a vision of how political change in this country will happen that is not what you get from Warren. With Warren, you get, I am kind of like Pete Buttigieg. I'm smart. I'm capable. Elect me. I'll take care of all of this stuff for you. Bernie Sanders says it's not me. It's us. We need a mass movement in this country to be able to overcome the extremely powerful forces that exist out there. You know, the medical insurance companies and the pharmaceuticals and the student loan companies and all of that. And he's using his campaign. This is what my book is about, is that he's using his campaign not just to put forward progressive ideas, but to try to build that movement at the grassroots level to achieve those things. And in my reading of American and world history is that that is how change happens. It's not through a benevolent and smart and principled leader being elected, although that's important too, but that can't be the only thing. You need that broader movement piece to make social change happen.
Monroe, I know you've been, I think you were favoring Elizabeth Warren, were you not? Correct?
Yeah, I was.
Was, as in past tense, or ongoing? You know,
well, my position has been that everybody who's running on the Democratic side, except for Tulsi, I could vote for. So, you know, I mean, I'm not anti anybody.
Well, and I can't remember what's your problem with Tulsi.
I thought she's gonna win. Huh?
What's your problem?
I think Tulsi is sounds like a Chicago Democrat. her position. She doesn't sound like a Democrat. Mm. She sounds like a Republican light.
Mm. Well, I
she's anti. She's pro Russian. She's saying a lot of things that Trump and the Russians are saying. She
I'm not going to revive the Tulsi debate. We've had this on the show many times.
Yeah.
Ramana Hussein, Samina Mustafa, we've talked a lot about Tulsi Gabbard in the show, and I don't even think she's going to be at the next debate. She said she would boycott it.
Well, that's why I haven't paid that much attention to her, because I don't think she's going to be a contender.
I want to do a little shameless promotion here. We were talking a Warren versus Bernie Sanders at the Hideout the first Tuesday of February. We'll be promoting this for the next month. We will have a debate. Both parties have agreed. Carlos Ramirez Rosa will be representing Bernie Sanders, and Brandon Johnson will be representing Elizabeth Warren. That's going to be one heck of a fun debate.
You got some good talkers for that one.
Yeah,
man.
That's going to be really good. And so Carlos is already trash talking, and he'll be on the show at 4. I'm sure he'll be trash talking. And Brandon's coming on the show in a couple days. I'm sure he'll be trash talking as well.
Ben, I'd asked you before the show if you had read the Pete Buttigieg essay from high school praising Bernie Sanders.
Talk about that. Yeah, he wrote this essay. You talk about this essay. It's really bizarre.
Well. Oh, I have a theory about how it's actually not that bizarre. But just to begin with, he wrote this essay in the year 2000 for some competition at the John F. Kennedy Library high school senior competition, an essay writing contest, and he won it. And it was with this essay that was praising Bernie Sanders. It's the whole thing is about Bernie and his political consistency and what he's fought for over the years. And it makes for very funny reading right now. And, you know, I'm an editor of a socialist magazine, and reading his essay, I thought, you know, there's not really much in here that I disagree with. So we ran it under his byline my magazine. It got a lot of attention. People had heard about it months ago, but I just had the idea recently. And so the Wall Street Journal wrote about how we picked this old essay up. But I wrote something for The Intercept about the essay and how when you read it, you know, just at first glance, you're like, oh, isn't it funny that this guy who's now running for office, who's running for the presidency against Bernie Sanders, wrote this essay praising Bernie and seems to represent the polar opposite view of doing Democratic politics that Bernie Sanders represents. But in reading it closely, you come to realize that Buttigieg says in passing of Bernie, yes, he's got these substantive socialist beliefs, and, you know, that isn't that good. But the bulk of the essay is about Bernie sticking to his guns ideologically over time, even when it was very unpopular to call yourself a socialist. And that's what he's mostly praising Bernie for. And it occurred to me that, of course, he admired that as a high school senior, and he probably admires it now because he is now playing that role. Pete is now playing that role as defending, you know, saying to millennials like me, no, you don't get student loan forgiveness. You don't get all these things you want. He's sticking by his unpopular political principles, but the unpopular political principles are now this kind of centrist democratic politics rather than socialism. It's socialism that's on the rise in the United States right now. So you can sort of see in a kind of perverse way what he admired about Bernie was his willingness to tell people what they didn't want to hear, yeah. And now Pete is playing that role on the campaign trail.
That is an interesting little spin. I hadn't thought of that. We should post that Jacobin Buttigieg essay on our Facebook page because it is interesting. Let's put it that way. All right, we're going to close down this discussion for today, and we're going to go back on the live stream at 4, right, D? Is that correct?
Join us. Carlos Ramirez Rosa will be joining us. 35th Ward Alderman. We're going to be talking all things, probably the city council meeting that just happened today. We're going to be live streaming at 4 o'clock. We're going to jump off now. Make sure to join us at 4, everybody.
All right, very good. I want to thank you, Micah, very much for stopping by. One more time, promote your book.
Coming out in April from Verso Books. I'm the author along with Megan Day. It's called Bigger Than Bernie, How We Go From the Sanders Campaign to Democratic Socialism.
All right, very good. And
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
And look forward to the Monroe Review.
We will be discussing. Yeah, we'll bring you guys back together.
I'll write an accolade for you.
Oh, yes. Appreciate that.
I want to thank Monroe.
Before we go, Monroe, just one more time. Can you say Putin?
Food.
I don't know why. I just love it. But
yeah,
I do.
The live stream loves it too. And Monroe has been steadily predicting this day. So let's just give him a shout out. Since March, he said the man would be impeached. And it is happening. And we'll be following this baby for as long as it goes. And my hunch, it's going to go a long way. Okay?
Yeah, me too. I think Mitch is going to try to not allow witnesses, but I think some of the Republican senators are not going to go along with that because they're up for a re-election and they can't make it look like a kangaroo court or they don't have a chance at all of winning.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to say, let the witnesses in.
And then it'll be an interesting thing. Like, will it get delayed because Trump's ordering witnesses not to testify, and so it goes before a judge, and then there's appeals. And Monroe, I am telling you, this thing will have a life of its own.
And other things, well, you have two other factors. Plus, there's all sorts of other dirt and crazy things Trump has been doing
that ongoing. Can
pop up at any time. And plus, he's going to get nuttier by the day. Yeah.
And by the way, I have to say a couple more promotions. David Ferris will be on the show on Friday. He's a Roosevelt University political scientist who's always been advocating that Democrats should be more like the Republicans and how they approach politics. And he is a forceful believer in dragging the impeachment proceedings on as long as they can. And David, if you're listening out there, we've had so many guests on the show who disagree with you. I'm going to have all their rebuttals. I can't wait to hear you just throw them at you, hear what you have to say about them. And we'll be doing debate analysis. If there is a debate, is there going to be a debate?
Yeah.
They cut the deal.
Yeah.
They solved the labor problem.
Yeah.
The debate will be Thursday, and Letizia Wallace and Samina Mustafa will be in studio to break it down and analyze it like they do all the time. So we're following this stuff, national and local, on the Ben Jarofsky Show, and we're bringing it all to you. All right, everybody. I want to thank Micah. I want to thank Monroe. I want to thank Miles. A lot of M's today on the Ben Jarofsky Show, and of course, the man, the myth. A couple more M's from Alton, Illinois. Back home on Alton, as Micah can tell you, they call him White Lightning. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash.
Dr. D.
No one calls me either of those things. I'm Dennis. Never going to get a job after this. Oh, the doctor. Oh, White Lightning.
See you tomorrow, everybody.
And remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows and Benny J. bonus interviews at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and wherever else
you download your favorite podcast. Downloaders, we live stream this program. It's true. Tuesdays through Fridays, 1 until 3 p.m. Central Time at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and the Chicago Sun-Times YouTube channel. Join us. Join the live stream chat. It's a great time. People make fun of Ben. It's a blast. And also, like we said, we're going to be live streaming our interview with Carlos Ramirez Rosa, the 35th Ward Alderman. He's going to be talking all things city politics. We just had a city council meeting. He's going to be giving us a recap on that. Going to be talking about legal recreational marijuana in Chicago and the delay on that. All kinds of stuff. Make sure you tune into that. And if you download the show, go look for this Carlos Ramirez Rosa interview on YouTube. We will see everybody tomorrow.